Welcome to another episode of the Westminster Confession of Funk on the Fight, Laugh, Feast Network. This is a podcast about storytelling, fatherhood, music, poetry, literature, the creative process, theology, and the perils of trying to live the good life. I am Jason Farley, author, teacher, pastor, and publisher at Jovial Press. Today I want to talk to you about a new book that I just picked up and read that I loved called Creating Character Arcs by K.M. Weiland. This is a book on writing, but it is a game changer of a book. It's the only book on writing I've ever finished and immediately restarted and worked through again. Even if you're not a writer, trust me, the wisdom that Weiland drops is significant. It's such a good book. There will be a link in the description so you can pick a copy up for yourself. I had a chance to interview Weiland for the blog. There's also a link in the description so you can pop over to the CrossPolitik website and find the interview, which was really fun. That's one of the things I love about having a blog with a readership, is that I can find great authors and great artists and great creative people that are worth your time and get a chance to interview them. I hope you'll go over and read the interview. It's really wonderful. Now, here is what is a game changer about this book. For me, as a fiction writer, it was game changing, but it's much beyond that. I have two fiction works coming out in the next 4 weeks, one of which will be sent out free to all CrossPolitik members a few days before it's released. So if you're already a CrossPolitik member, you'll be getting that in your email soon. If you're not, you want to become one, then you'll get it as well. And if I had had this book when I began writing, especially my novel about leprechauns, it would have clarified what has been such a significant struggle in my fiction writing, character arc. I worked and worked at it. It was really, really difficult because I didn't quite understand how it worked. I knew I needed it in there, and I knew some of the mechanics of it, but I didn't have a clear grasp on how character arc worked until I picked up Weiland's book, Creating Character Arcs, The Masterful Author's Guide to Uniting Story, Structure, Plot, and Character Development. Because she is able to boil down and explain what it is that a character arc is about, and really how a character arc functions when it's working well in terms of the inner life of a character. And it's really pretty amazing, because she boils it down to the fact that a character believes a lie about the way the world works. And that lie is keeping them from being able to live freely in the world. And that the character arc, when it's a positive change character arc, is about them coming to understand the truth and being able to live freely in the truth that they didn't have before. Once they change and come to understand it, then they can truly actually live. She writes, "The lie your character believes is the reason for all character arcs. After all, if everything's hunky-dory, why change? Think of the lie as the cavity in a tooth. Everything might look shiny and white on the outside, but inside there's decay. If the character is ever to be happy, he's going to have to do some drilling to excavate the rot in his life. But, like most of us with a rotten tooth, he's in denial. Even though he keeps biting on that tooth and pushing at it with his tongue, he doesn't want to admit he's got a problem. In order to avoid facing the painful reality of his lie, he wants to pretend the problem is something else. The lie plays out in your character's life and your story, through the conflict between the thing he needs, the truth, and the thing he wants, the perceived cure for the symptoms of the lie." That is such an incredible explanation of character arc, of character problem, of story question, of the internal life of a character. But think about it. That really is the way that life actually works. In fact, Jesus is the one who explains this very thing in John chapter 8, Jesus is speaking with Jews who had believed him. He said, if you abide in my word, you are truly my disciples. And if you will know the truth, the truth will set you free. And they answered him, said, we are the offspring of Abraham. We have never been enslaved to anyone. How is it that you say we will become free? Now, what's interesting is at this moment in time, the Roman Empire is ruling them. So what they mean by we've never been enslaved to anyone is, I'm not sure. But they are living in a lie. And he says, the truth will set you free. And in fact, he is the truth right in front of them. And he says, truly, truly, I say to you, everyone who practices sin is a slave to sin. The slave does not remain in the house forever. The Son remains forever. So if the Son sets you free, you will be free indeed. I know that you are the offspring of Abraham, yet you seek to kill me because my word finds no place in you. I speak of what I have seen with my father. You do what you have heard from your father. You are of your father, the devil. Now remember, the devil is the one who tells lies from the very beginning. That dragon who was in the garden in the beginning, who lied to Adam and to Eve, he is a liar from the beginning. And so when he accuses them of being of their father, the devil, because they're living according to lies, he's saying that so that they can be set free with the truth. Instead, they double down on the lie. They say, Abraham is our father. And Jesus says to them, if you were Abraham's children, you would be doing the same things Abraham did, which meant believing in God. That's what Abraham did. Abraham had faith. He says, but now you seek to kill me, a man who has told you the truth that I heard from God. That's not what Abraham did. You are doing the works of your father, the devil. They said, we were not born of sexual immorality, which is an interesting comment. That means the story of the fact that Jesus was born to Mary, who was pregnant out of wedlock, appears to have gotten around. He says, you have been born of sexual immorality. He says, we were not born of sexual immorality. We have one father, even God. And Jesus says, if God were your father, you would love me, for I came from God and I am here. I came not of my own accord, but he sent me. Why do you not understand what I say? It is because you cannot bear to hear my word. You are of your father, the devil, and your will is to do your father's desires. He was a murderer from the beginning and does not stand in the truth. Right? He used lies, the devil used lies, to try and murder, well, in order to bring death into the world through sin. So he was a liar from the beginning because there is no truth in him. Jesus says, when he lies, he speaks out of his own character, for he is a liar and the father of lies. But because I tell you the truth, you do not believe me. Right? Truth, according to Jesus, is intimately connected to life. Life cannot be lived on lies. It needs truth to survive. And our internal life, our embrace of truth, really does free us to be able to live well in the world God made. And God's commitment to us is that he is guiding us by his Spirit into all truth so that we can live the life God intends us to live. That's what God says he is about in our life, that God promises that our character arc is about God cutting out the lies, bringing us to truth. That the painful things, the good things, the beautiful things, all the things that the Spirit of God brings into our life as he pilots the ship of our life, everything he brings us through is in order to get us to the harbor of truth where we can live well in the world God made. It's really an amazing promise. And Weiland's book does such an amazing job of laying out all of the different kinds of things that, as a writer, we want to work into our stories in order to be able to tell true character arcs. And what's amazing is how many of those things, as you read, you think, oh my gosh, this actually applies to my life right now. It was one of those surprising books where I thought I was reading a book in order to improve my Leprechaun novel and in order to improve the things that I'm working on. And really, God had this intention of improving the way that I saw his own work in my life. It was really a fun read, as well as incredibly informative. But the best books do that, right? They hit us on multiple different levels because they reveal truth to us like this book does. It's really, really fun. One of my favorite poems is an epic poem written by G.K. Chesterton called The Ballad of the White Horse, and it's the story of Alfred retaking England after the pirates that are trying to conquer England decide that they're going to stay, and they run some of the kings of England out and about, and Alfred is going to reunite England and then win it back for the English. And Alfred is a Christian character, and you've got these heathen pirates that keep trying to take down England. And at one point, the pirates look like they have won, and Alfred is having to wander through the countryside, and he comes upon all of the generals for the army that is trying to conquer England sitting around a campfire singing and telling stories. They're doing beership like we talked about in a previous episode. They're gathered around and they're singing to one another and telling stories around the fire at night. And one of the men, Guthrum, just finishes singing this great song, this long kind of epic song about how even though he is conquering England and he is leading an army and he's successful at it, he's actually frozen ice cold on the inside. And the only thing that for a little bit makes him feel warm is when he has a chance to kill one of his enemies. And killing his enemies is the only thing that temporarily warms his heart. Right? Really great guy Guthrum is. Well, Alfred, being the man that he is, he slips in and he gets next in line to pick up the harp and sing the next song. And I'm going to pick up right there. So we're right in the middle of the epic. It says, "The owls moaned from the mighty trees till Alfred caught the lyre to his knees and smote it in an ire. He heaved the head of the harp on high and swept the framework barred, and his stroke had all the rattle and spark of horses flying hard." And then this is Alfred's song. "When God put man in a garden, he girt him with a sword and sent him forth a free knight that might betray his lord. He brake him and betrayed him, and fast and far he fell, till you and I may stretch our necks and burn our beards in hell. But though I lie on the floor of the world with the seven sins for rods, I would rather fall with Adam than rise with all your gods. What have the strong gods given? Where have the glad gods led when Guthrum sits on a hero's throne and asks if he is dead? Sirs, I am but a nameless man, a rhymester without home. Yet since I come of the Wessex clay and carry the cross of Rome, I will even answer the mighty earl that asked of Wessex men why they be meek and monkish folk and bow to the white lord's broken yoke. What signs have we save blood and smoke? Here is my answer then, that on you has fallen the shadow and not upon the name. That though we scatter and though we fly, and you hang over us like the sky, you are more tired of victory than we are tired of shame. That though you hunt the Christian man like a hare on the hillside, the hare has still more heart to run than you have heart to ride. That though all lances split on you, all swords be heaved in vain, we have more lust again to lose than you to win again. Your lord sits high in the saddle, a broken-hearted king. But our King Alfred, lost from fame, fallen among foes or bonds of shame, in I know not what mean trade or name, has still some song to sing. Our monks go robed in rain and snow, but the heart aflame therein. But you go clothed in feasts and flames, when all is ice within. Nor shall all iron dooms make dumb men wondering ceaselessly. If it be not better to fast for joy than feast for misery. Nor monkish order only slides down as fields to fen. All things achieved and chosen pass, as the white horse fades in the grass, no work of Christian men. Ere the sad gods that made your gods saw their sad sunrise pass, the white horse of the white horse veil that you have left to darken and fail was cut out of the grass. Therefore your end is on you, is on you and your kings. Not for fire in Elifen, not that your gods are 9 or 10, but because it is only Christian men guard even heathen things. For our God hath blessed creation, calling it good. I know what spirit with whom you blindly band hath blessed destruction with his hand, yet by God's death the stars shall stand, and the small apples grow. And the king, with his harp on shoulder, stood up and ceased his song, and the owls moaned from the mighty trees, and the Danes laughed loud and long. Not only is it just a beautiful poem, it's well written, it has that truth in it that the truth within us makes us able to continue to live well in the world, whether we're up or whether we're down. When Alfred is king, he's faithful to God and he lives well. When Alfred is in exile, when he's wandering, he lives well because he retains the truth within him that all of these things are working together for his good. All of these things are the Spirit's plan to transform him into who God intends him to be. Now that truth sets us free to live, like Paul says, when he has everything he needs, when his stomach is full, when he's having steak for dinner, and when he doesn't have what he needs, and when he's going hungry, and when his ship is wrecked. He can serve God in every situation because he understands that God is at work in his character arc, bringing him into all truth so that he can live in freedom in the world that God made. It's a beautiful promise, and it's a truth that we can hold on to. Thanks so much for joining me for another episode of the Westminster Confession of Funk. If you're looking for more of the funk, check out my blog, which is hosted by the Fight Laugh Feast Network. You can find my books at Amazon.com, and you can visit Jovial Press for more. For all of you members, you'll be getting an email with one of my books in it. And keep an eye out for my forthcoming novel, episode 1 of a series called Leprechaun Wars. Thanks for joining me, and keep it funky, people.